This guy just signed a deal to enter his 10th NFL season, a career that started on one final tryout before he entered the education world and gave up on football forever. His name is Casey Kreider. He plays for the New York Football Giants. He's the oldest Hawkeye in the NFL. His story is incredible, and you will enjoy this podcast. I promise you. Sit back, relax. Let's have a day. Let's go. I forewarned him. And actually, Kev, I did not let you know this, but Casey also has beef with you.
I do.
Casey has beef with me?
Yeah. So
you've cleared some of it up tonight, but that's good.
Okay. Damn.
You just want me to start.
I'm glad we have this opportunity. I don't want this to fester.
I'll give you the floor, Casey. This is Casey Kreider. He's been on once or twice before. Snapper. Everybody's tuning into this one, actually, probably. The entirety of Hawkeye Nation. So welcome in to the listeners. Another just casual intro. Yeah, there's beef all over the place, Kev. So I'll let him take it from here. It's valid beef too.
All right. I'm glad to hear it. Let's hash it out.
After the Luke Elkin podcast, I noticed a trend that it was glaring, right? I think, like I said, I'd been on twice. Luke had been on.
Subert
had been on.
Oh no.
A lot of long snappers, and the only long snapper you showed up for was Danny Ulsta, but you were there for good reasons, because I was there when I first met Danny too and learned of his Dan Gable connection, because Dan Gable was my idol growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You just felt like there was a lot of hatred, a lot of slants towards the long snappers on the podcast. And I believe my quote to Tyler was that, Kevin, you were like, I needed you to remember your roots and just remember, like, you were probably 0.3 of a second off of your 40 time for being Tyler's backup at Iowa. I felt like you just kind of like you're one of us, you know, like you're
that's a good way of putting it.
One of us.
Way better tackler than both Tyler and I.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, you God. Were running down a kickoff and like, listen, no discredit if the audience doesn't know, like, playing kickoff and kickoff return is the hardest positions on the football field.
Not anymore. They got rid of the wedge.
Yeah. Frontline kickoff back in the day, though, when you had to run backwards 30 yards full speed, turn around and try to block someone who was running full speed at you, like, damn near impossible.
Oh yeah, it's very difficult. But it's a good point. If I had skills to throw a ball between my legs, then, you know, I probably wouldn't have been on those special teams either. And, you know, I, like you said, I would have just been one of you guys. So
no,
and
you were good.
You started rattling that off. I'm like, God, I did miss that one. That's you're right. That's bullshit, and that's extreme disrespect to my fellow specialists.
But you're accountable to it. You know what I mean? Like, you own up to it. You could have taken the honest route and just been like, listen, I have another job that pays the bills. Like, that's what I was doing, and I probably would have been like, I mean, fair.
And that is the case, like 95% of the time, right? You know, but you know, it's still disrespect to the position, disrespect to the walk-on. So I'm
true.
I appreciate you calling me out on that. I'll be better.
Accountability. We can be accountability buddies.
You know, and this is the leadership that you get out of Casey Kreider. This is what we walked into. This guy was a hell of a leader. He's not afraid to call out his teammates. So I appreciate that. I'll be better for it.
His teammates or his coaches. It's the one story I tell about Casey.
You told that story the one time I was on, or maybe it was after I was on, and I had completely forgot about that situation. But now that I remember it, it was electric. It was a lot of fun.
Quite literally lives in my mind. I mean, I probably think about it once a month. I was flabbergasted. I'll tell it again for anyone who hasn't heard. We do have a lot of new listeners. We pick up new listeners every season. I think it's been 2 years since Casey's come on. He did not come on last offseason. So Grant, I don't think you have.
I was going to say, this is my first time talking to Casey.
Yeah, this is Casey, Grant, Casey. We're 10 days. We're 10 days in, Kevin and I. The 2013 class is fresh. And I've known Casey for a week and a half and Marshall and all the guys, and we're just thrown in the fire. And this is back when camp was an actual camp, not like a 15-day summer camp that they go to now. There were 2-a-days. It was hot. There was days in Kinnick. Yeah, this happened to be a day in Kinnick. And when you practice in Kinnick, there's not a lot of room in there, right?
It's tight.
There's not a lot of room on a double practice field. If we didn't have the indoor, like the specialists would still be a little crunched on a two practice field. You put us in Kinnick, now it's like, what are we doing, right? You got the entire 100-plus man roster in there trying to do practice. So what this ends up in is the offensive side has one side, the defensive has the other side of the 50, and the specialists just kick down the 50-yard line crossways, right, until it's our turn in the period. Like, you got fucking Kornbrath kicking balls, trying to kick them out of the stadium because that's the only direction you can kick them.
So, like, given the sidelines, you got maybe 60 yards.
Right. Like, to get a full snap, I have to be out, like, right behind a drill, basically. Like, I'm setting up right behind the receivers, like, in the 1v1 DB drill. Like, that's all this stuff. So it's tight, right? Coach Parker, he doesn't give a fuck, right?
Zero.
So
zero fucks.
He comes over and he goes, specialist, get out of the fucking way. So, you know, one of those. And Casey looks at him. Dude, I'm terrified. I'm still terrified of Coach Parker. I'm 10 days in, so this is 100 times bigger. And Casey looks right back at him and goes, sure thing, Coach. Hey, put a field goal post in the fucking parking lot and we'll get out of here. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, we're fucked. Oh, no. Casey, what are you doing? I was so scared. I looked at Marshall. I'm like, it was like the kindergartner who got somehow inducted into the third grade recess. And you're like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I didn't say that. It wasn't me, Coach. I promise that came out of Casey's mouth. Do not hurt me. I don't want punishment. And of course, Casey knew what he was doing. Senior on the team. He had built up all of the tokens, not just Greg tokens at that point, but he had built up Coach Parker tokens, Coach Doyle tokens.
I lost most of my Greg tokens that year, though. I spent them.
Well, you need
stocks.
We changed footballs. Oh, yeah. Talking to the specialist. We went to this super pointy quarterback throwing receiver football. I was like, hey, you realize we have to kick and punt these things, right? Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. Well, can we at least get a bag to work on him? He's like, well, you'll get him when camp starts. I'm like, camp? What? We're just going to change footballs before camp? And that was another battle.
Yeah, I forgot about that because he did kind of – he was
I didn't want to say like I was like someone had to stick up for the specialist. And at that time, I was
definitely you.
I still – to this day, if we have to go inside and here in New York, we rarely go inside. Like, we play in the elements, so you practice out there. We had a young kicker who was a practice squad kid, went to Rutgers, was a kickoff guy. He was on our practice squad. He's from Ireland, a great dude. We're in a drill, the O-liner out to the left, and the kickoff's supposed to go left. He's like, dude, I can't hit the left. I'm going to hit the O-lineman. I said, just hit him. Just fucking hit him. Seriously? He's like, no, I don't want to hurt him. And I was like, dude, we get 6 minutes. We have 6 minutes to work on kickoff. Like, they can get out of the way. And sure enough, he kept hitting him down the middle, and our coordinator turns. He's like, hey, will you hit the ball where it's supposed to go? And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to help you out, dude. So every once in a while, you gotta like stand up for yourself as a specialist.
I do think that was like the first in the whirlwind of a first camp. That was the first example of, oh, wow, there's like tiers to the guys in the program. You get a lot of examples, right? But like a very clear example of, okay, certain guys on this team have a relationship with the coaches and the staff and the rest of the guys. Like, there is a hierarchy in a college football program, and Casey's at the maybe not the top of it, but he's in the top level, and I am not. And there's a firm understanding that we're going to let Casey deal with any of these situations when they do come up.
I had a unique spot too, like. Phil knew me when I was a linebacker and D lineman.
Yeah,
like my
right.
First 2 years there.
And I didn't understand any of that.
And Kevin, you might have witnessed some of these because we were still in Jacobson then, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like there was that players lounge kind of like to the side of the locker room. And
there was couches. Two couches and a TV.
Yes, two couches and a TV. And we used to, the specialists used to post up there. We'd be watching like what is it, Sunday during Sunday after a game, we would just be sitting on the couch watching whatever NFL game was on. You guys would be doing corrections, and then you'd like walk through that area to go to the locker room, and then it'd be like, okay, time to chirp the specialist. And I remember that year, there was a couple times as I got older, there was always one young kid that, like, he was a freshman, kind of felt like he was part of the group. He just wanted to, you know, the vets would chirp us as we walked by, you know, I'd be like, hey, it'd be like Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Yeah, kiss my ass, kiss your ass, kiss his ass. Yeah. They'd kind of feed it to me. I'd feed it back. And then the freshman would chime in. And then it was usually another good vet would be like to the freshman of the defensive or offensive position group, would be like, no, no, you shut up. You don't talk to that guy like that. He used to be a defensive lineman and linebacker. He's lived this life. Like, he got out. He's on the other side of it. Like, he used to sit in position.
He got out.
He did blocks. He did 9-on-7. Like, you leave him alone. All those other guys, they're fair game. Go after them. That guy's free. So,
yeah, like, who the fuck are you, man? You just got here.
Yeah. And to add on to all your other guests, blocks at 9-on-7 are the worst drills ever invented in the sport of football.
Yeah.
They're pretty bad. I'm going to give combat drill the edge, though. Did you guys do combat drill?
We didn't do that. I've seen it in the NFL. It's not probably not as physical as like what you guys were doing, God. But it's more like, hey, it's in joint practices where you do it. Mm. Get in cones, yeah. In a box. Hey, one guy drop, one guy. You're the kickoff guy. We're not doing collisions. And in those joint practices, it's like after the first rep, you know, someone's gonna get bull rush, and then it's on. It's just like it's on then. And now it's just like, let's make sure no one fights.
Do the coaches just get together like, hey, man, these guys got a little bit of hostile energy going? Why don't we just do this drill, we'll get it out, and then we'll go over.
Always happens. So in those joint practices, you get what you need to get done, you do it the first day.
Oh, like, sure.
Yes, because there's a high likelihood the second day is going to get canceled. Now, I think that's going to change. It's going to change because once they eliminated that fourth preseason game, all these teams now, they're doing joint practices because when you're a starter – or you're on the 53, you get the brunt of your preseason work in those joint practices.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Like even for me, like when we go a joint practice and it's a punt period, that's the practice where I go, am I ready to play in the season? Like it's not the preseason games. In the preseason games, very rarely are you getting a rush. When you do, you're usually getting tipped like as the one snapper on the roster, like the coordinator might say, hey, first quarter, get a punt in this area. You're probably going to get a rush, like just so you know. And then there might be guys that go rogue, but in those joint practices, it's 12 straight rushes and it's good on good. And you find out really quickly if you're ready. Like I've been in a joint practice where the veteran wasn't ready and they flew in a long snapper the next day.
Really? To
do punt period again. It was crazy. It was the wildest thing I'd ever seen.
Should have brought my ass in.
You may have been available. It was my second year in Denver when it happened. It was crazy.
2017?
You watch it, right? You watch it live, and I just remember thinking, like, "Oh God, thank God that's not me up there, because my ass would be gone in a minute."
So very, very tight margin for error, basically, is what you're saying. Like you got to be ready to go the entire time.
When you're young, you got to spend that first year as a young snapper, just making sure. It depends. It's changed too. Like my first year, I got rushed almost every game. Like I've gone back and watched it. Every game, I'm getting rushed. And if you can get through that first year without being a liability and protection, now they kind of they call the dogs off on the position. Now you're always the weak point. If a team's going to scheme up a rush against in the NFL, it's against me, the long snapper, right? I know that you know it. You just gotta get used to it. But these young guys coming out, if you don't land on a team like Detroit, who's going to fake it anywhere and everywhere on the field, you're getting rushed. If you're unless you're New Orleans, where you're going to punt out of rugby, which we did 2 years ago here in New York, which was awesome. Like we kind of revolutionized rugby punt in the NFL with two other teams.
Rugby is sick.
We had like no rules. It was insane. We were just on the sideline, just drawing stuff up because just based on where we were at with our roster and who was playing, like it was the best way to protect the punter. And then our punter, Jamie Gillen, was unbelievable at it. He, as a lefty, and Tyler, you can appreciate this. He rolled out right to his right as a lefty and punted it right. Live in an NFL football game.
With his right foot?
With his left foot. And we netted like 43 on the punt.
Excuse me? That's absurd.
So we were like drawing stuff up. It was like, hey, if we need
you
to
roll left,
it just sounds so awkward.
But we would roll left, roll left, roll left, and then teams would start like playing to it, and it was like, okay, hey, just line up in the same formation and go right.
That's nuts. First of all, so that's
It was so much fun. It took a coordinator who knew what he was doing. It took a head coach that trusted the coordinator, and both of them to have some sizable cojones to like give it the green light. And we made it work.
Cause you're getting a little,
is there a chance that like he just pulled that thing down? Like he could have gotten some yardage and maybe got the first down.
There were a couple games when you look at the pictures, It's like, oh my gosh, if they keep doing this, like we're going to get 60. Like, let's just do it. Let's do it. But it's like, then you're standing there on the sideline and you're going, we haven't practiced it.
Yeah.
This is brand new. We don't know what they're going to come out in. Like,
That reminds me of Nebraska in 2015. We called a fake, right?
Oh.
We're going to run it. We called it to the right. And for some reason, I don't know if they had a tip or something, but like they got seven dudes over on the right
side. First time all season.
I think I remember the play.
And we're in our left formation. So, right, we got the snapper, guard, tackle, end on the other side. There's a one tech, and then there's a guy on the outside of the end. They left two gaps over there. I'm like yelling back to the Josie. I'm like,
flip it.
Let's just go left.
Yeah.
He didn't do it. We called the timeout. I think we ended up.
Dude, Kev, that was one of the craziest times out there because because that has to be relayed to me because I'm snapping it leading one way or the other, right? So I'm listening to
you. Dude, he would have gone to the house, man.
We had numbers by like not just a single man advantage because that's what you're looking for in case you can expand on this. I don't know how many fakes they've really done, if any. But if you're trying to drop a fake on special teams, you're looking for a one man advantage. If you can get one, you're probably like and they come out and they line up in it. It's a go, green light. Kev, what do we have? A three man advantage if we wanted it, like something nuts. It was
cool. Both the guys on that side of the field were getting double teamed, and you had one guy to go get the
lead block.
Returner.
Yeah. And so Kevin's looking back. I'm looking over at Kevin. Kevin's going, flip it, run it left. I can hear Josie back there. Run it. He goes, you going left? Run it left? And I was like, guys, what are we doing? The clock's ticking. I'm getting a little antsy just remembering this because we legitimately almost called our own
audible. It was a tight game too.
Oh, we almost called our own audible, and then someone finally called the Coach Woods or Wallace was probably on the sideline looking at us, looking at each other like, oh, they're gonna do something stupid. Somebody give them the timeout. Case, do you want to for a second just off that rugby conversation describe what the difference between a rugby and a regular punt is to the people?
Well, for us, since we did it, we were doing it in the NFL, it was strictly formational was the only difference.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and then the punter's rolling out instead of just staying inside the pocket, walking straight.
Right.
But the reason teams haven't done it in the NFL, except for really the last 2-3 years, was because in the NFL, the only people who can release downfield after the snapper snaps it are the gunners.
Yeah.
And it's not even the gunners. It's the widest men on the line of scrimmage. So, like, you can go gunners over, so both your gunners are on one side of the field, but the guy that's inside the outside guy can't leave until the ball's punted. Mm. So in college, anybody can run downfield after you snap it, and that's the advantage of running spread punt in college.
And it was great.
Yeah, and guys just run downfield, and you go make a tackle, and everyone's in coverage. So in the NFL, it was kind of like, hey, this isn't going to work because no one is going to be able to get out. They're just going to rush eight.
Yeah.
And get to the block point. So we had to work that out in the NFL. And the way we got around it was like everyone directional punts in the NFL pretty much. So you were kind of rolling towards the direction you were punting. Now, if the punter mishit it, everyone's running left and that ball goes right.
Oof.
Like you're in trouble. You saw it a couple of years ago, Kansas City, Philadelphia Super Bowl. Like the punt went the wrong way. That's how Kansas City got off to as the start of that big return. And I think you guys spoke about it. Maybe it happened once this last year for Iowa. Like punt direction is huge. These punters aren't just banging footballs out there. I mean, one of my favorite Kirk Ferentz quotes of all time is when kickers or punters are struggling and you hear him be like, I'll go get Joe College, you know, out of rhetoric 101 to come in and do this. And it's
I could fucking I could find somebody at fucking Hillcrest, okay? We'll go to the dining hall, get somebody right out of the line trying to grab a slice of pizza. He could knock it through, okay?
And, I mean, it's – so that's the biggest difference between NFL and college. And then, you know, I know you guys had Luke on. Like, the biggest transition is going to be protection, you know? And Tyler, you know what that was like.
Yeah.
And when Tyler got there, we changed coordinators. I remember begging – Coach Ferentz and our new coordinator, please do not go to spread, because spread was blowing up in college at the time. I was like, please just give me my last year in pro punt. Like, I get it. I understand why we would switch. It makes sense, but please don't change this year. We can change next year.
Don't do it to me, please.
Yeah. Because it was an advantage, right? Like, I wanted to go to the NFL and I needed another year of learning how to protect and seeing scheme was going
to
help me.
Little did I know, I also would have liked to go to the NFL. And
it's a different animal. And we joke about it now. Like, I remember I walked into the facility one day and one of our assistants was like, hey, did you look at the write-up for the teams? I'm like, yeah, I looked at it. And he goes, you see that guy? You know, guess how big he is? And I was like, I saw he's like, you know, 285, 6'4". Guess what he runs a 40? And I said, you don't have to tell me. Like, everybody does this in the NFL. He probably ran a 4.6, right? He goes, yeah, 4.63. I said, yep, okay. Yeah, just add it to the list of guys who are freak athletes playing out there. And that's what you have to – that's the transition, right? You go from running down the field and trying to tackle to now block freak athletes to then go run down the field and try to make tackles.
And every special teams coordinator is like, what guy on this punt team should we try to take advantage of? How about this dude who starts with his head between his legs?
It starts at the long snapper, and then typically it goes, who's a rookie? Mm-hmm. And then if it's later in the year and the rookies, you know, have shown to do a good job, then it's okay. Did they have injuries? And is there someone new on the punt team? And after that, it's like, okay, what kind of scheme do they run? Do we have rushes that really affect that scheme in a positive way for us? Let's run that. So it's kind of – there's a checklist you go through.
Yep.
I was so excited when we switched to the spread because I was – linebacker, athlete, quotation marks, hardly an athlete at the Division I level, but thought I was an athlete. I could at least run a little bit. Wasn't totally clunky down the field. And so when they're like, yeah, we're going to switch and you're going to run down the field, especially after 2014, you were off. Well, we'll get into 2014 because I want to go back to your first 2 to 3, 2 years floating around, Casey, because I think that's a fascinating story. But in 2014, we're just like, we're still running what is it even called? Spread versus what?
Pro. We just call it pro.
Our pro, yeah. We're still running pro style. And if you wanted to see some atrocious tape, just throw on the 2014 punt unit and zero in on number 97. I don't think I guessed right all year. And part of that is because I was guessing and I had no idea what I was doing and I would have gotten better. There's a couple times where,
who was your PP? Do you remember?
Q, PP,
personal protector. There you go. Oh, Q's a good dude to have as a personal
protector. Q was a starting linebacker that year.
It was Q.
It was still Q, huh?
It was still Q. And he did save my ass a lot.
I've had some elite personal protectors, like Nate Ebner was one of my personal protectors, like potentially going on as one of the greatest special teams player probably to ever play the game. You get guys like that, like you don't even have to think as a long snapper. They tell you the answers to the test,
sure.
Which is super helpful. And, you know, relating it to offense and defense, it's like a quarterback who knows the coverage and the blitz before they start the play. Make checks, get us in the right play, let's go. It's like the linebackers setting the front, making adjustments on the back end too, safety telling the corners what to do. Like, it all ties together. Each phase has a lot of similarities. Just some people get to do it a lot more than the fourth downers.
Do you think the pro style of you doing that at Iowa, I don't know, because you said it was starting to kind of – the wave was coming of the spread. Do you think that's a large reason – that separated you when you came out?
I think it gave me an advantage. But like I wasn't invited to Senior Bowl. I wasn't invited to Combine.
Yeah.
I had two teams that were interested when I came out. when I got cut both years, in total, I had three workouts in the 3 years I was trying to make a team. And a lot of these guys who didn't run pro punt, they were working out every other week.
Yeah.
So, like, I think I was definitely better and more ready than a lot of these other rookies in my class. But also, I think that the tape was out there, right? So the teams could look and say, hey, we kind of know what we're getting with this guy because it's on tape. Let's bring these other guys in for a workout because we don't know what they can do. We haven't seen them set, try to block.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing I can think of. And then the other part is, like, you got to have the skill and the ability to play in the NFL, but you got to get in at the right time. Like, you need to get in when teams have a need at your position and have a need for your skill, right? I think I said this last time. Danny Olsta, if he was coming out of college right now, he's playing in the NFL for a really long time. He's built – he's kind of probably between you and me, Tyler, build-wise, but he's a lunatic. And he runs downfield, and he'll block anybody. He's not scared of shit. He would play. If Danny – Andy Schultz graduated when Danny Olsta did, and Andy was the snapper before me, Andy's in the NFL because at that time they wanted bigger bodies. Andy was like 6'5", 260. And he was what they were looking for when Danny graduated. So, like, you got to get in at the right time and kind of fit where the game's going.
That's got to be – I mean, that's most true of specialists in any other position, right? It's like there's 32 job openings, and guess what? They're not – nobody's holding a second long snapper. So
and like, kickers right now, like, historically, you go back – like, the way the kickoff rule is now, like, if you can't – if you aren't a kickoff guy but you're a great field goal kicker – you are going to fit into the NFL today. Now, when I was coming out, like, they wanted to see you hit a touchback like that. You needed a touchback ball,
and then
you
needed
directional kicks, right?
Because, like, Keith Duncan would be in the league right now too.
Yeah, I mean, and Mike Meyer, when I came out, Mike was an incredible field goal kicker. Like, Mike Meyer and Marshall Kane would go shot for shot with each other, and I'd love to hear Marshall's answer to this, because they would play like horse or pig field goal kicking, and
I know
Mike would probably win the majority of the time. Like,
oh yeah,
but Mike had an unconventional kicking style that coaches didn't like the look. It didn't like the look of it, and it just didn't work for him. And then weird. You know, Marshall was more conventional, and he could hammer the football. Like, that dude had a cannon.
I'm curious, what did Mike do differently? I guess I never noticed,
and I couldn't tell you because I've watched. I like Mike was my kicker almost my entire career, because I think he came in my second year. And then he was the kicker every year I was there. Marshall came in a couple of times, but when I watched my kick, it was just like, oh, that guy's a good kicker. I didn't realize he kicked differently than everybody. And it was just like probably his approach, his finish, his follow through.
Yeah, it was – I can kind of talk about it. Yeah, not that I know more than Casey, but relative to kickers, like, Mike had this pendulum. His leg swung like a pendulum. It was very like – smooth through, whereas like a lot of kickers, more like Marshall, are punchy. They punch the ball, and it's like, it's something that like is a very, it's a sort of a niche thing, like a specialist coach or a special teamer would be able to pick it out. Everybody else, they're just gonna look in there like, okay, these two guys are kicking balls. Mike was just, I mean, he was almost too smooth. It was crazy.
He's swinging from the hip more and less like knee extension, or
if you slowed it down, that might be it. But it's
you're right. He was very like pendulum. It was very smooth.
Yeah. And it looked slow.
I think a guy like Harrison Butker's kind of changing that dynamic now too, because Harrison, you know, like, he's falling to a knee every time he hits the ball because of his ankle, right? Yeah. But he's making kicks. You know, at the end of the day, this business is about making kicks.
And he hates women.
Allegedly.
I had to throw one in there. I mean, we don't have Drake here. We had to throw one in there, right?
Drake's alive. I saw him. I saw him down at NFL Media Days, and I know he's been on recently.
He is alive.
Walking by with George, and someone on McAfee show was like, hey, that guy, that's Drake. He's a great guy. And I was like, oh, Drake's a legend.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, he's Drake's doing Drake, you know? You just find him in random parts of the world.
What do you think Drake in 2014 would say if he saw himself in the mirror as 2025 Drake?
Oh, I think he'd say, yeah, that makes sense. Like, that.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, dude had the highest and tightest haircut back in the world back then.
I hosted him.
You did?
Yeah, he looked like a Nazi, honestly.
I don't know. I didn't host him.
Because he was – yeah, tell us about that.
I hosted him.
He was a different weekend than us, I think, Clue, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think I hosted him. He just, like, came in for a day. And I think it was him and his dad. I remember we went out to eat. And they were just talking about how good of a swimmer he was and this and that. And I think at the time – I think part of the reason I hosted him because at the time my wife is from Muscatine. And we were dating at the time, so I think people knew, like, I had a Muscatine tie somehow. So they sent me, and I was just like, this guy's – he's a great dude. Like, he seems like he's going to come in and work hard, and he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulder. And he was kind of a lot like the rest of the people that get recruited there to walk on. Like, you know, he's got a partial to here, and you and I want him to come play, and we're going to ask him to walk on. And it's kind of like – it's not – they don't sell you on the dream of this is your best opportunity to grow as a football player and a man. It's like, we're not telling you this is the best opportunity. Like, we're not like trying to convince you. This is the best opportunity for you to become a really good football player and a really good human being and a productive adult. Now, productive adult for Drake, you guys can debate that.
Well, they actually missed on all three for Drake. You know, just a battered football player. I don't know what we could say as a what kind of man he is. And
he was the perfect fullback. He's the perfect person you're looking for to play fullback.
That is true.
Unless you're Pat Ricard and weigh 310 and run 4.7.
Yeah, that guy is a little bit absurd. He weighs 310?
He was close. 290 that's, maybe now. But at one
that's
point,
insane. Even at 290, that's insane. Yeah, it's the timing is a big thing. I asked the question of, like, what separated you, because it is – probably never anymore that I think probably by about 2019, 2 years past since I was not, or I guess a year past since I got no calls, nobody hit me up at, you know, after the draft, nobody wanted me to come in for a workout, nothing, zero. And I was like, okay, I'm over it. Like, I get it. But I still think about you playing still today, which we talked a couple weeks ago, and you're great. And you're talking about how you think you're about halfway done. And I want to get into that too. And I'm like, how the fuck did Casey make it? Like, how did he, how was he the one, right? Like, how do I come into Iowa? There's this guy who mentors me for 4 months, rides off into the sunset, which it really wasn't a sunset, 'cause you had 2 years worth of, like, yeah, substitute science teaching.
I was around for a couple more years.
Yeah. And then like, you know, we're here in 2025, and this guy's playing. He's like an all pro playing for the Giants, about to go into double digit years on his career. And I'm like, how was it him? How? And I think a luck is a big part of it, and you probably would agree with that. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's crazy to me. I sit here and I'm just like, how?
It's crazy to me too. I mean, I was where you were at the second year out. So that would have been 2015, the 2015 season. I was still coming in. I was substitute. I was doing my student teaching, 'cause I was like, we'll go back, right? To go graduate, go to Dallas, 2014, have a great preseason. I mean, an elite preseason. Like, I get cut in Dallas and they tell me, like, you could play. I remember sitting down with Rich Bisaccia, who's the coordinator, assistant head coach in Green Bay. He says, you can play in the NFL today. You can play for any team in the NFL. You could play for us. And I'm sitting there going, well, why? Well, this feels like I'm getting cut. Why are we doing this? You know, but you're not going to play for us, because we're not going to change our battery. You know, they got a good relationship. LP's still playing really well, but stay healthy, stay ready, stay in shape, like, do X, Y, and Z. 'Cause if he gets hurt, you're our call. I mean, that's very positive. I left super excited. I mean, I was pissed. Like, I couldn't wait to get out of Dallas. Like,
that's about the best way you can go out the door, though.
Yeah, and I just remember drove, like, I think it was like 14 and a half, 15 hours or something, the drive, and I drove straight through, and I was just like, this is bullshit. Like, what other job can you sit there and be told, like, you've done everything we've asked you to do, and you could excel at this job for 10 years, but we're going to fire you. And it's not because you want too much money. It's just true. because we're going to keep the older guy who we're going to pay more. And I was like, this sucks. This is horrible. So, you know, I had a workout in Chicago that year. Again, I thought I killed the workout. There were three guys there. Coming to find out later down the road, like, they just didn't want a rookie at the time. And it was like, well, if you don't want a rookie, why did you bring me in? But I know why they do it now. They just want to make a list. So I substitute taught. I coached wrestling. I trained at the University of Iowa. Remember, Dallas calls again. We're going to bring you back. And that 2015 preseason was ass. It was so bad. It was horrific. Like, I played so bad in the games. Practiced great, but when you put bad stuff on tape, you don't know what's going to happen. I remember leaving Dallas that time, super pissed off. And I think we had just given up like a punt return touchdown, a kick return touchdown against the 49ers. I get cut. And again, Rich Bisaccia is there. And it was just like, hey, you've regressed. You're really bad. Everything we ask you to do, you didn't do. You haven't gotten better. I don't know what's wrong with you. I was so mad. It took every ounce of me not to like blow back at the guy. Like, no, the things I change, you asked me to change. You wanted me to change my footwork. You wanted me to do this. But that was a learning moment for me. Like, I went back to Iowa City and I was like, okay, I got a decision to make. I can just kind of be done, or we can give it one more year. So that was the moment I said, let's give it one more year. I'm going back to what works for me. Forget changing things. I'm not going to turn into this veteran Dallas long snapper, LP, who was really good. Like, he's probably the greatest long snapper in Cowboys history. But I couldn't do what he did. Like, my footwork wasn't going to work. So I went back to what made me good. Kind of was feeling really good, but I didn't get very many looks, didn't get opportunities. I think I've told this story here. New York calls me for a workout middle of the year, gets stuck in Cedar Rapids Airport for 12 hours in a snowstorm. Oof. My dad called and said, hey, let's drive. We call New York. Hey, we're going to drive. We'll be there at 5 a.m. We're just going to come straight to the facility. And they say, don't worry about it. Don't risk it. We'll reschedule the workout. We're not going to sign anybody. The next day, they signed Tyler Ott, who was in my class, went to Harvard. He's out on the East Coast. Tyler Ott plays the last three or four games of the season. I'm devastated. Like, I'm done. Like,
that's
Hey, Casey, I would have killed myself. And sorry, that's a trigger warning to the people listening. You know what you get here in the walk-ons. I'm telling you right now, I jump off a building if I miss a workout. And they sign somebody who ends up playing. Tyler's dead.
Yeah, unalive. I was there. And luckily, Diane Coffin, she's a science teacher at Iowa City Regina. I was subbing in her class the next day, and I kind of told her, and I was emotional. And I remember she just was just like, hey, I feel like terrible for you, Casey, because I know how hard you've worked. She's kind of been a mentor of mine in the education world forever. And I remember she said, but I don't know you as the football player. I've known you as the teacher. You're going to be a fantastic teacher. You're going to be a great father. Because I was getting married that summer. Megan and I were going to start a family. And that for them, I was like, holy shit. Like, okay, so I'll be okay if football's done. And I was going to quit. I was done. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I need to move on with my life. And Megan, my wife now, was like, give it a couple more months.
And this was 2015 season?
2015, like NFL season.
Okay.
So I remember Megan just said, hey, give it the rest of the summer. Let's just see what happens. The season ends. The Super Bowl goes on. I get a call from Carolina. They want to work out, but they're up front. Hey, we're going to fly in for a workout. We're looking at punters. Want to see you. We've heard about you. I go to Iowa's pro day at the time, and I think that was Marshall's senior year. He was going to the combine. So I knew there was going to be a bunch of scouts there. And they needed a snapper for the workout anyway. So it just worked up. Marshall called me, hey, do you want to snap? I said, absolutely. And that's when I think that was before the workout in Carolina. So I think that's when Carolina noticed me, and then Denver noticed me. So Denver, Carolina play the Super Bowl. I go to Carolina. They're not looking at snapper. Snap well. I remember Ron Rivera was a head coach. He pulls me aside after the workout, says, hey, just snap like 10 footballs in front of me. So I snap 10 and I look up and he's just like, okay. He doesn't say anything else. He just leaves. I'm like, I look at the corner and say, hey, what was he looking at? He goes, oh, he thought you had like a tell. Like, he thought he could see something, you know, and Ron played forever and he's been coaching forever. And he goes, but if he didn't tell you he saw anything, he would have told you if he did. So I was like, oh, that's a good thing, I guess. So we keep going. Then Denver calls for a workout. The day before I go to Denver to work out, I signed a full-time teaching job at Iowa City High.
Oh, shit.
I signed a contract, and like, I remember I sat down for the final interview. This was the third interview, and they were like, Casey, listen, we gave you an interview because you've been such a great sub and you've coached 2 years wrestling here. We did not think you were going to get the job. Like, we were kind of just giving you a pity interview and you've kind of knocked it out of the park. Like, it's between you and this other guy whose parents have worked here for 20 plus years. This football thing is giving us hesitation. And I said, well, here's an email from my agent. He's been very honest and said, it's probably not going to happen. Like, my agent said, find a job. I don't think you're going to get another shot, but who knows? So I had this workout in Denver and I kind of knew about it, but I didn't tell the school. I just said, like, you know, if it works out, it works out. I show up in Denver, Dove Valley. Grant, I know you're feeling this, right? You're feeling this right here. And there's like 13 long snappers there,
oh,
which is unheard of for a workout. And they had just cut their long snapper, Aaron Brewer, for a long time. And it was kind of out of the blue. Like, no one really knew what was going on.
It wasn't like you can go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, there were some things going on. So he had some issues.
He's a fucking alcoholic, isn't he?
Well, Brewer's still killing it. Like, he's still a fantastic long snapper down in Arizona. So he had some demons and some issues that he was working through at the time, and it got in the way. So I go down there, right? And I go first like an idiot. I don't know why I decided to go first in the workout. And Chris Gold, his name's Beep, he's their assistant. He's in with the Chargers now. It's Robbie Gold's brother. Just kicks my ass off the line of scrimmage. I remember I go to the end of the line before my next rep, and I go, if I can't block that guy, there's no shot I make it in the NFL. But Beep was unreal. Beep was kicking everybody's ass. And I finally said, screw it. I don't care. If I don't make this team, I'm done. I'm going to go teach. I'm going to raise a family. I'm going to be happy. And I did great the rest of the workout. They signed me. I call Iowa City High's principal from the airport and tell him, hey, sorry. I know I signed that contract yesterday, but I want to be on the Broncos for training camp and stuff. Okay, and they work with me. Hey, great. Let's set up together a plan. OTAs, I would go work out. I'd go back to my hotel. I would lesson plan. I'd sit down with a textbook. I'm making PowerPoints. I'm getting ready. If I get cut, I'm jumping right into teaching. Halfway through camp, City High calls me and says, hey, how's it going? I said, it's going good. I think I'm going to make the team, but they don't really tell you. I didn't know I made the roster until I got handed the game plan for against the Panthers week one, like on a Wednesday. Like, they don't just say, hey, you made the team. I showed up and they're like, here's the game plan. I'm like, I must be playing. This is good. All right. We did it. But halfway through camp, they called me and said, hey, we need you to resign. We have a replacement for you. He's going to coach and it fits the mold. I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, I appreciate everything you've done, guys have done for me, but I'm going to chase this NFL thing.
Here's my PowerPoints.
Yeah. Long story to the 10 years. Like, I'm still here and doing it. And there's been ups and downs in my career. And I don't take it for granted. Like, I still remember being a teacher. I remember begging someone to give me a key card to the indoor facility at Jacobson so I could, you know, go snap to the trash cans if I needed a place to snap in the middle of winter.
I had you called me a couple times to come let you in.
Oh, I would find out what time you guys worked out and I would be there just to sneak into the door so I didn't have to like call someone to let me in.
Yeah.
Like if you're not supposed to be in that building, you're not getting in.
Right.
So I've been super fortunate in my life. A lot of people have helped me along the way. Got really lucky. Like you said, like the Denver thing, it was just luck that, you know, the snapper was going through some stuff and it was kind of a wake up call for him. And I know Brewer and he's a great guy. He's a great snapper. He's still kicking ass down in Arizona. And I love seeing him all the time. I remember the first time I saw him after the whole thing, he slapped me on the shoulder and we were going out to eat with him because our special still knew him when I was in Denver. He slaps me on the shoulder, shakes my hand. He just said, hey, you're welcome, pal. And I was like, yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Like, hope you're doing well. And he's killing it. You know what I mean? Like, everyone goes through those growing pains.
So I got a question for you. You know, obviously you persisted longer than most people do pursuing the dream, you know, 3 years out of college. Do you think that first meeting you had when you got cut in Dallas where the guy's like hyping you up like, hey man, you can do this, you got all the talent, all the skill, all the ability to do it, do you think if like they just kind of cut you and said, hey, thanks for everything, here's the door, we'll call you if you need you, instead of having that meeting, do you think you would have kept going as long, or do you think that, you know, kept you on the hook for just long enough to get that last opportunity?
I think it definitely kept me involved. I think I still would have went after it for at least another year because there were the right people around to kind of help me make the decisions. You know, now they have the XFL, and at the time there was a new up and coming, you know, it was pro football, but it was like off of the NFL. And they wanted me to go to, I think it was Omaha and be the snapper for one of the teams. And I remember I asked Coach Doyle, and Doyle was kind of like, what do you want to do? Do you want to get paid to long snap or do you want to be in the NFL? And I was like, I want to be in the NFL. He's like, okay, so focus on being in the NFL, right? Like, don't even waste your time. Like, you have film from the NFL. Why would you go do this league that's not even started yet? And that was like, I needed that guidance, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think everything happens for a reason. Like, I tell our young guys this on the teams I've been on. I would not never have made it where I am today without being cut twice. Like, I needed football to be taken away from me. You will no longer play. I needed that to happen because I needed to know that I had to go out there and play with no hesitation. Play like it doesn't matter. Go play like who gives a shit if you get cut. If you think about getting cut based on your play, like you play slower, you don't play reactive, you don't play to your strengths. And I needed that. I needed that to happen. And that's what kind of unlocked it in that workout in Denver. It was like, oh, I'm good. I'm going to go teach. I have a job lined up. Who gives a shit if I don't make this team?
Yeah.
And like when I got signed, I was about to miss my flight back to Iowa. My wife's like, hey, you're going to miss your flight. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm getting a physical. And she's like, okay, you're gonna miss your flight. I'm like, they'll give me another flight, I'm pretty sure. Like, they're not going to leave me here. And I think this is a good thing. And then after that, it was like, I was trying to channel my inner Josie Jewell outlaw, right? I was shooting from the hip. Like, it was like first joint practice. I forget, it was either Chicago or San Francisco, that training camp. And it was like, again, that's where I found out I was ready to do this. Because every one of those 12 rushes was a snapper beater. And I was like, I don't care where this football goes. I am going to throw it as hard as I can between my legs. And then I'm trying to figure out who's trying to run me over. And I got through the period. And I think I remember our coordinator kind of walked by. He's like, yeah, that was pretty good, huh? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Felt good. Yeah, I guess. And that's kind of, you just kind of build confidence along the way.
What's the emotional reaction where, like you said, week one, you get handed the game plan. It's like, did I just finally fucking make it? Like,
yeah.
Tell me what's your thought process there?
Everything happened so fast. Like, so my coordinator at the time was Joe DeCamillis. He was the coordinator in Chicago when I went in for a workout. And they kept two snappers on the roster that year. That would have been 2014 training camp. It was a CFL guy and a younger American guy. And the guy who won the job after the cut date, I remember seeing him tweet some stuff. I can't wait to be a Bear for a long time. And the whole time I'm going, I have a workout tomorrow with the Bears. Like, they're bringing me in to probably take your job. So that training camp in Denver, I'm going the whole time. My wife's like, hey, we're going to make the team. I'm like, well, this coordinator brought in a young guy, me, 2-3 years ago at the end of training camp. He might be doing that right now. So I walk in Wednesday. Actually, it might have been a Tuesday because I think we played Saturday, we played the first game of the year. It's not on a Sunday, so whatever day it was, I remember we sat down and Joe was like, Casey, I've been getting so many phone calls this weekend. They're saying that they heard we hate our long snapper and they want to move on. And I said, oh shit, really? Oh, is it true? And he goes, I told them to go fuck themselves. And I, to this day, I will drink Kool-Aid for Joe DeCamillis. I will die for that man. That man gave me my shot. He put trust in me. And I did well for 10 games that year. So yeah, it's kind of like, holy shit, I made it. But we're playing the Carolina Panthers. This is a rematch of last year's Super Bowl. Like, we can't celebrate this one. Let's get through. Because everyone keeps telling you, hey, preseason to regular season, it's a speed difference. Regular season to postseason, speed difference. And it was way faster. But I did it well for 10 games, and I got hurt that year. And, again, that was a kind of a kick in the pants. Like, well, hopefully they bring me back. I missed the last 6 games. And again, go on the next year, have another good year, make it through all the games, and knock on wood, I haven't missed a game since. So
probably because you're eating a bunch of eggs, right?
Chris Manhurts, a longtime tight end on our team, he got me on Athletic Greens. Like, no free shout outs, I know, but Athletic Greens.
Oh, this isn't a free shout. We're being paid for this one.
All right, yeah, hell yeah.
Iowa Egg Council, gotta squeeze it in here. I'm captivated by Casey's story. Yeah, right there beneath Grant. Give a like on the YouTube video if you're watching the video version for the Iowa Egg Council. I mean, they just want you to eat more eggs. 5 every morning for me. I'm not lying. Again, when you got to maintain high muscle on your body, you got to get a lot of protein. I'm sure Casey eats a lot of protein. I don't know what much more to say. There's four guys on here that just love eggs. Kevin eats eggs
probably
every day.
The most versatile cooking ingredient.
Oh, one of the most
eggs. Any meal, any time of the day, versatile. What's
your favorite type of egg?
I'm a big fan of what do they call them? Soft boiled eggs. So hard boil them, but you keep the yolks runny. Yolk is an elite. Will level up any dish.
Facts.
Runny yolk.
Facts. I just do scrambled because it's easy. But
I'm an over easy guy.
Yeah, Kevin's there. He loves it over easy. I don't know what Grant's doing over there. Maybe he
hollandaise sauce on anything.
I think it's what's like. I just throw it in the pan until it's cooked in the
sunny side up.
Runny. Is that sunny side up? Yeah,
sunny side.
Used to fry a lot, but I would get like burned on my arms from the pan. So I stopped doing that. But I don't know, scramble a lot too. So
all right, well there you go. Eggs probably played some role in Casey being in the league for 10 years, staying healthy since that first injury. No, I didn't know. So maybe you went over this in detail the first time we had you on, but I feel like I would have remembered it. I do not remember knowing that your second year in Dallas was trash. I did not. I never knew that.
I think it's probably like if you don't know what you're watching, it probably doesn't look that bad.
Shh.
But when you know.
But if I watched it.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, that was like.
Especially compared to the first year.
Because again, you're talking about the preseason where 80% of the rushes you're getting are six box. So every snap should be perfect.
Sure.
You're not blocking anybody. And I probably missed like two tackles or something. Like, and it just wasn't good. And it was, I just remember, I try to be a realist, right? I just remember thinking like, that's not going to get it done. And no team's going to watch that and go put that guy on our ready to go list. It's like, oh, that guy's get him out. Get him off the list.
I didn't know that you had you'd signed the contract to be the teacher. And the next day that's crazy. I didn't know.
Yeah. And it sounds slimy, but I was very straightforward and honest with them. And I think luckily they knew I wasn't trying to, you know, pull one over on them. Cause like I had the receipt. It was like, you probably aren't going to ever make it in the NFL, but
we'll see. You got that email still?
I probably do somewhere. Yeah,
dude, you should print that and like put it up in your garage.
And I appreciated the brutal honesty too, because I was like trying to make life decisions. Like it was like, do I put my life on hold to continue chasing this, or do we get married and I take this teaching job and start my teaching and coaching career, and then we can start raising a family.
Speaking of a family, this guy's got four kids.
Four.
Is everything awesome. Is everything okay over there? Is the house is it still standing right now?
It's awesome. This last one was wild though. So we found out we were having our youngest daughter about a year ago now, and it's like you're super excited, you're happy, another little one to raise and watch grow and kind of enjoy, and then you go, oh shit, that one's gonna be born in the middle of the season. Ooh, that's not good. Our first three were all born in July, right before training camp. So, like, we didn't plan it that way. It just kind of all worked out. But we have anniversary, three birthdays, training camp. Like, it's celebrate, 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 training camp.
A lot of cake before training camp.
Yeah, yeah. We go into July light, go into training camp heavy, and then try to lose it. But then we look at the schedule, and it's like, this is great. Baby land, the due date's on a bye week. This is perfect. And then you look – deeper into the schedule and goes, wait, the week before the baby's due, we're in Germany. Megan's never gone full term. Like, she's been early with all of our kids. And I was like, oh boy.
How long is a flight from Germany to? Oh.
So we usually leave Thursday night on these Europe trips. And my wife had an appointment Tuesday before we leave Thursday. She was like a four on the dilation scale. And like when you get to a 5 year
on Tuesday,
you're like active labor.
And you
like,
left.
I was like, the baby wasn't due for like another week and a half, 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
But bro, what you just said is true. Like
when Megan and I, we were on the same page. Like I'm playing in the game. Like unless there's an emergency, I'm playing and then I'll come see you. So she's at a four. So I'm doing the math. I'm like, okay, so she needs to go into labor tomorrow.
Yep.
I can fly out Friday, meet the team Saturday, and we'll just get through the game. Like, yeah. I'll buy my own flight. The team was awesome. They knew they were in the loop. But it was kind of like, if I get on this flight Thursday, I'm not seeing you until Monday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, even if you go into labor, I'm not making it from Germany back in time. So the baby cooperated. I got home Monday morning at like 5:30 in the morning after the game, because you play the game and then you leave. It's like 4 o'clock in Europe, and it's like, you know, 11 o'clock, almost 1 o'clock Eastern here. So I get in at 5:30 in the morning, lay in bed for 30 minutes, kids wake up, I'm hanging out. They jump in bed, haven't seen me in a couple of days. My wife calls me at 6:30 and goes, we're going in. It's time. They got me in for an induction. We're going in. Now, I was home for like 45 minutes, went straight to the hospital, got baby was born that night, got home Wednesday, had a great bye week. Everything's been perfect.
That's got to be nice. Yeah. Dude, that's got to be the power of your wife. Just like,
she's a champion, man.
She's just making it happen.
She had her core set for about 4 days.
She was just.
I think when I left, I think I landed in Germany to a text message that said, if this baby comes while you're in Germany, you're going to retire. And I was like, oh, well, we'll talk about that. I don't know if that's the truth, but you can have that one for now.
Well, that's a good segue, because you literally said the words to me. I might be about halfway in a phone conversation we had about 2 weeks ago. How does that work? How does that even make sense in your brain? And how does Megan feel about that one?
I've always been goal oriented, probably to a fault. Like, I have strength and conditioning goals that I put on a poster when I was in high school that I still haven't hit. Like, I was just not. I'm a naive, right? Like, it's like, I'm gonna do this. This is what I'm gonna do. And some of them I still haven't hit. But I remember when I finally made it in Denver, after all that stuff, I said, I will not be happy unless I play for 7 years. Why 7 years was the number, I don't know. It was kind of like, if I play for three, that'd be cool. I'll make some money. But like, that's not something I can go. I'll go around telling people like, hey, I played 3 years in the NFL. Like, it just doesn't sound that good. Oh, right?
Brother, from the other side, let me tell you.
I know this is irrational.
I still tell people that the 49ers called me before the draft to get my information.
It's irrational. But I was like, if I can say I played seven, that's awesome. Like, pretty cool.
For sure.
And then I hit seven, and it was like, okay, so how many guys can say they played 10 plus? And not just play, but started 10 plus, right? So now this year will be 10. And I always say, once I get to 10, we'll set another goal. It'll be something crazy like 13 or 15. But it's literally just taking it year by year. It's knowing my body. It's taken the first couple months after the season to get things back and healthy. Trying to stay mobile, because as you get older, obviously things get stiff and harder to move. And the league doesn't get older, right? The league stays young. And I'm still to the point now where we get a lot of rookies that come in. We had a pretty young roster last year, and about halfway through the season, some guys would ask me a question. Like, when we had our fourth, they were like, man, that's awesome. Is your first one? I'm like, no, it's my fourth. And they're like, what? Your fourth? How old are you? And I'm like, oh, 34. And they're like, no way. There's no way you're 34. I'm like, I'll take that as a compliment, but I promise you I'm 34. And then the next one's like, well, how long have you been doing it? It's like, 10 years almost, like a long time. And they're like, wow, so what year did you graduate? I'm like, stop, let's not go there. I think it'd be cool to like graduate, like still be playing. And my high school graduation was the year like one of these guys have, like, I don't know, been born, or like they were going to kindergarten or something. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, bro, you're yeah. not yeah I mean yeah. Your high school graduation would have been when? 2009?
Yeah.
You're
coming up on it, man.
You got about 3 years, and there might be a.
It's fun now because I'm old school, right? Like, when I got in the league, the first thing I did when I got to the locker room was I grabbed the program they put in your locker, and it's like, look at the other team's roster. Who went to Iowa? Who on the staff has an Iowa tie? Go say hello to them. So I still do this to that day. And a lot of these young guys, they have no clue who I am. And I have to be like, I'm a former Hawk. Just wanted to say what's up. Great job you're doing. You're killing it. Keep it up. You know, happy for you. And that's when you graduate 2013. And it's like the Kevin Hart thing. Dang, you know, dang. Don't do that. But it's fun. You know what I mean? Like especially now.
Dane Belton comes up. Damn.
Dane's awesome. Dane's played PP for me for 2 years. He's the best. But like, we played Cincinnati, and their returner, Charlie Jones. Like, I know he transferred, but I think I tackled him twice in the game, which was awesome. And it's just like, there's fun. And when we played Cooper, like I was talking shit to Cooper, and he's talking shit to me. And I missed the tackle against him the first time we played him. he kind of turned and gave me a look, and I was like, listen, you come right back to that same spot next rep. I will be here. I promise you I'll be here. I'll probably miss again, but we're not. I'm going to keep coming.
I'll be in the vicinity.
But it's fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun to see these guys, and I think – officially, I'm probably the oldest Hawkeye in the NFL right now, I think, because Micah's done.
Yeah.
It was James and Riley 2 years ago. You know, they're done. James is on our staff now. And now that Micah, I think, officially retired because we're the same recruiting class. You're might be the oldest.
You're the old guy, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Holy shit. That is nuts.
So is it are you going until the NFL chews you up and spits you out, or is there ever a point where you're like, you know what? I think I've done enough. It's time for me to be a family man, and then we're going to hang it up.
I was just talking to Megan about that last night. Like, I would hope that I can play until I'm satisfied and I can leave the game on my own terms. I don't know if the competitor in me is going to let me do that. But you look at these older snappers that are still kicking it in 16, 17 years in, very rarely do you stay with the same team all the time and go out on your own terms. A lot of these guys are going to a different team, and I talk to them, and they're leaving their family where their home base is. That would be hard. That would be really hard. But I'm in a cool spot right now where my oldest is, and he's 7 in first grade, and he's finally getting into football. Like, he actively wants to go to all the games.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the players. Like I ask him who his favorite players on our team, and he says Malik Nabers, and I'm like, well, that's kind of bullshit. Your dad's on the team. Can I be your favorite? Like, not Malik's way cooler. All right, who's your second favorite? Dex. You know, sexy Dexy. Oh, okay. Well, where do I fall in line?
It's like you're about 53.
Yeah, but he goes and he's watching the games. He goes with my dad, and he's asking. My dad's like, dude, it's incredible, Casey. He's asking about the rules, and my dad loves it. My dad's telling him the rules and why that happens. So that kind of brings a little more life to me. It's like, okay, I want to play long enough where my kids can remember going. Like, and they have no clue. Like, you see Saquon when we're playing Philly and I go talk to him. I played with him for 4 years here. We don't talk about football, right? Our kids, his oldest daughter, my oldest son, after training camp practice, every day, every time they were there, they'd line up and they would race up and down the field. So I go see Saquon, and the first thing
that one from the Kreider family, or
we don't win that one much. But I ask him, how's everyone doing? And he asks, hey, how's Landon? How's your kids doing? And I'm like, Landon, Saquon asked how you're doing. He's like, oh, cool, great. And I'm like, you have no cool.
Hey, buddy, that's Saquon Barkley.
That is, you know what I mean? Like, that guy's he was the offensive player of the year. Asking, he knows your name. Like, how cool is that? He doesn't care. Like, he just enjoys going and watching.
I wish Saquon knew my name. He just saw me as some other guy he was running past when we played him.
Man, I will never forget. Were you guys on the team that night game, or was it?
Were we?
Oh, yeah, because the clip I remember was he hurdled somebody.
Snyder.
Going to, I think, Iowa benches left, and the safety came down and hit him in midair, and he didn't move.
Yep.
He got hit midair. He didn't move. And I remember watching the game like, holy shit, that guy's different.
Yeah.
That guy's different.
And he returned punts, too.
Oh, yeah. Like,
those kicks. I don't think punts.
Was it kicks?
It was definitely kicks.
I definitely did kicks.
I want to say they put him back there for a couple punts, too, because I was like.
That's different. Kickoffs, like fielding kickoffs and punts, those are like, it sounds like it should be the same, but it's different. It's different. Like,
way different.
Those punts are no joke.
They're actual nukes coming out of the sky.
Yeah.
The punters in the NFL are, I mean, we're an hour and 3 minutes into this thing. I could talk for another hour and 3 minutes.
I'll tell you a funny story. My first year in Dallas, we had to shag football. It's a lot like Iowa, like limited space. The punters are hitting cross field. Hey, rookie snapper, you need to go make sure the ball doesn't go into the offense's drill, right? Like, yeah. God forbid Tony Romo twists his ankle and he's out for the year. Okay. That so make tough. Sure that doesn't happen. I'd never caught punts in my life, really. I'm like, oh God. So, okay, make sure we catch it. This is 2 minutes before my first punt period in training camp, fully padded. I catch this ball and I went, oh God, that didn't feel good. I looked down and I dislocated this finger. It went up on top, like it dislocated up on top. And I'm like, that's not good.
Your right hand for your snappy hand?
My right hand, yeah. The one that does a lot of the work. So I go to one of the trainers that I knew was kind of like, I'm an old wrestler. He kind of seemed like he was pretty, you know, gruff looking. And I said, hey, you need to reset this. He goes, oh, we got to go get x-rays, make sure. I said, nope. I'm either leaving and doing it myself or you're going to do it. And we're not going to act like this. The conversation didn't happen. He's kind of like, you serious? I said, yes. He sets it, and it didn't swell up right away. So I got through the period, and it just went like a huge sausage. So that whole first training camp, I had to buddy tape my fingers together and learn how to snap like this.
You're fucking kidding me.
Because I refused to go get it looked at. It's like, I'm not missing this opportunity. Like,
dude,
that or not get a shot. So I was like,
you snapped with two fingers taped together on your right hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're better than me, bro. You are. We knew that with the 10-year career and I'm behind the microphone, but that is unbelievable. I can't even imagine that.
He's like, how'd you do it? I'm like, I had to catch a punt. He says, you don't catch punts. We pay you to long snap. I was like, noted.
Yeah. I wasn't getting paid, but I really tried to run the scout kickoff team like a lot, mm-hmm. all the time. And KF, I ran a couple reps. I got in one time because they were low on bodies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And KF walks over and he kind of recognizes me in there. And he goes, Kluver, get the fuck out of the drill. And I was like, oh, fuck. Did I do something wrong? Like, I kind of run up to him or run past him to just like, he's like, what do I do? He's like, Kluver, we can't have you fucking your hands. Like, we need your hands. Okay. He can't get hurt.
That first training camp again. I think Rich was just trying to test who I was as a person and as a competitor. He joint practice against Oakland. The threes/fours are going in for the live kickoff. And he goes, hey, go play the four. I said, what? He goes, yeah, we need a body. You go play the four. I was like, I've never played kickoff in my life other than high school. Even then I didn't play because I was the one play I didn't have to go. I got a break. I had so much fun. I literally just said, all I need is a pair of gloves. Give me a pair of gloves and a mouthpiece. I need a mouthpiece because I didn't wear a mouthpiece. But if I'm going to do that, I need a mouthpiece. And I had a blast. I still do it today. Like you said, like I'll jump in the drill or look like, hey, we need a body, but don't be dumb. And I just look at him. I said, I'm telling the coaches now on our team. I said, I'm telling you right now, if you put me in the drill,
I'm going hard.
I'm not a body. I'm going out there and I'm going to try to make a play. And then I do it, and then they look at me, and I remember I got a phone call from our coordinator last year. He goes, don't ever get in the drill again, ever. I said, well, one of the coaches told me to get in. He goes, you tell him no next time. I said, that's not in my blood. I don't tell coaches no.
Because then you find Casey on tape fucking diving for guys. He's laying people out. Like,
oh, man, it's so much fun. And as I get older, I do learn, like, okay, I don't need to be doing all that.
Well,
I don't need to be, but I'm also not going to let – the drill we get 6 minutes. Why waste a minute trying to get a body out there when I'll just go out there?
I saw something, Casey Kreider amongst one or two other guys, top most tackles in the league by a long snapper this past season.
It was tied a career high. I think I had 7 or 8 on the year, but I only got credited for 5 because for those other ones I missed, there were penalties on the play. And when you accept the penalty, whoever gets the tackle doesn't get a credit. Now, caveat, one or two of those tackles was knowing the rules. So if you're the closest to the returner when he runs out of bounds,
you get
credit for the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
So I was like, if we had a returner that was hitting the sideline, I was like, listen, I promise you I'm going to be the closest. Like,
I will be credited with the tackle.
And I'm like diving. I'm diving to get in front of a guy or one of our guys to like, yep. And I'm going to feel like, you know, like when you get a block, I got my head like, that was me. That was me. Give me the tackle. I 2 years in a row, career highs in tackle. That was good.
We played North Texas in 2015. We're beating the shit out of him. I get tossed in there. And I'm chasing down this dude who just trips over himself and falls down in the background and in the backfield. It's my one tackle for a loss in my career.
Dude, listen, they don't go back and watch the tape. They just look at the number.
Yep.
Yeah, I want to say I was credited with like 7 solos in college, but like I actually had like 11 or 12, but the stats people suck dick. So,
oh yeah, they'll screw it up for sure.
Yeah.
You can look at it on the iPad on the sideline. So like you get pictures on the tablet. They're not iPads, they're Surface Pros.
Yeah.
And then there is a statistics tab you can click. So if I think I got a tackle in the game, you might catch me clicking the statistics tab.
Is it live updated?
Yeah. Yeah,
they zoom in, and Casey, you can see Casey's just giving himself tackles over there. He's like, yeah, plus one. Well, that was probably a good time to ask Grant the questions you had for him.
Okay, Grant, 2 questions, and if you got questions for me, fire away. But first one, no disrespect to the other two, even though I've already called Kevin out. Where do you do your research to get your questions for the guests? Because you come up with some insightful, intuitive questions that, like, it's almost like the guy who's really into hip hop and he asks him these questions, and the hip hop artists are like, how do you know that? Like, are you a Fet?
Oh, Nardwar?
Yeah, like you're kind of Nardwar esque in your questions. Where are you doing research at? You got
Nardwar is great. Baseball or what?
Nardwar is awesome. I'm not nearly as good as Nardwar, but I don't know. It's kind of a lot of different things. I just kind of whenever we get a guest, right, I want them to feel like I want them to get a question they might not have been asked before. So like I kind of sift through it a little bit. I like to also like listen to other people's interviews that they do, and then if like I kind of imagine like, okay, if I was interviewing them, I would have like followed up on this, but they didn't do it. So like, oh, they just kind of gave me a free question that I can ask now, unless they answered it on a different one. But I mean, I don't have any like sources or anything. I try and be a little creative. I think of like what I think would be funny or whatever. And sometimes it does get a little embarrassing. Like sometimes I try and do a joke or something and it just airballs so bad. And like goes either like over their head or they're like, is this guy the biggest idiot on the planet? I'm like, oh, well, maybe one person also found it funnier. Maybe it was just me, but I don't really have any exclusive sources or anything. I don't have like, oh, I'm going to call my guy and see what he's got. He can dig up for me.
I've got a guy in New York. He knows Case.
Yeah. I just, you know, I Google and try and find stuff. It's interesting to me, but I'd say like I do get a lot of stuff from like, I'll go listen to someone else's interview. I'll be like, well, why didn't he ask this question? Or like follow up on it with this or like something like that, I guess.
I like that. Second question. Give me your favorite craft Colorado beer. And I'll give you my
Colorado beer.
I mean, just really local like, beer. Like your beer, like come on, you're from Denver. There's gotta be one that
he's only been able to drink for like four months.
Yeah, I'm not really like a huge like, oh yeah, I'm tackling all the big IPA scene up in Boulder, like I'm or anything, but I don't know. I mean, I drink like I love going to the Blue Moon Brewery in Colorado. Yes, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, and they got a bunch of different stuff in there. It's really cool. Like they I went there with a buddy, and I remember they had a blood orange Blue Moon was awesome. I loved it. But that's not really. I don't think that's really like what you're asking for. I guess.
I just wanted. All right, so do this. Next time you're out, go get yourself a Dry Dock Apricot Blonde.
I do love that. When people have like an apricot beer, I almost Dry always get it, and they're always good.
Dry Dock has the best, I promise.
Dry Dock has the best one.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
You head up into the mountains, go to Tommyknockers.
Okay.
Get the Jack Wacker Wheat.
Okay.
Okay. And if you head up north to Fort Collins, there's a, it might not be in stock still, but there's a darker beer called a Sad Panda.
Sad Panda. Okay.
I am trying to get someone to ship me Apricot Blonde. They won't ship it. Spotted Cow is one of my favorite. Obviously, we probably all know Spotted Cow. We used to have a lineman from Wisconsin, and every time the first game of the year, his mom would drive up. His parents would drive up, and I would send them money to bring cases of Spotted Cow up to Jersey for us. But Dry Dock Apricot Blonde, phenomenal. Jack Wacker Wheat, Tommyknocker, and then the Sad Panda. I forget the brewery, but it's like a super heavy dark beer. You'll love it.
No, I definitely didn't do a good job. I don't live in Colorado anymore. I'm trying to go back and visit a little bit, but it's I don't think I did a great job like exploring all the breweries around Colorado.
I love how they name the beers. It's just like Anxious Cheetah.
But also, I'm a pretty simple dude too. Like I'm more than satisfied. It's like, oh yeah, Coors Light, please.
Oh yeah,
it does not take a lot to make me happy.
There's nothing better after a game. You get back from when I was playing in Denver. You get back from a game. I just named great craft beers, right? Uh-huh. Those are no more for like off season. Enjoy a couple. Yeah. After the game, you get back, you sit down, and you crack open one of those little hand grenade Coors banquets.
Yeah,
they're tiny glass bottles,
perfectly fit in your hand.
Elite, you can't beat that. of age, drink responsibly, everyone. But
or don't.
Yeah. Listen, that's on you. Like I think you
it's
should.
Like, it's a little bit of a joke on like Twitter now, where guys will go and like they have the big chalkboard wall, or whatever. It's like 50 different craft drinks, or whatever. It's like, oh, cool, yeah, that's great. Like, do you guys have a Miller Lite though, or anything in there? Like, these 9.5% ABV sounds great, but I'll just have a Coors Light.
Yeah. We do that now. Like, my parents, my in-laws or someone will come out. They did it when we lived in Denver. They'd be like, I'll take a Busch Light. And it's like, you're in the wrong place for a Busch Light. But I get you something. Trust me, just follow my lead. I'll get you something close to it. And then out here in Jersey, the beer scene isn't as what it is in Denver.
They have
pizzas out here. Elite. Oh, pizza's elite.
They opened up a new brewery down in Iowa City, I think like my junior year there. And it's like, I guess they're competitors to our friends at Back Pocket, so I'm not even going to say their name.
Not currently a sponsor, so you could say it if you wanted to. But
I want to keep working with Back Pocket. I like they're nice people. So, but anyways, they had a I remember I went there the first time and I just it was like, oh, can I just get like a Coors Light or like a Michelob or something? Because it's like, I don't know, I have like $15 to my entire name. So, and they're like, oh, no, you can't do that here or whatever. Like, no, we don't have those. I just got like schooled. I remember like the bartender looked at me like I tried to order like, oh, can I get like the water of the Holy Grail, please? Like, he was like, what are you doing? But yeah, I don't know. It was, and they had good stuff too. Like, I remember they had an apricot drink for a little bit as well. That was fine. But I've had that experience before with the craft.
I just love it.
Get schooled on doing it. Yeah.
Well, that's about the first time on this podcast in 585 episodes that I just sit here and I have nothing to add. And I talk a lot. I can talk about anything.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. There's a I don't think I've ever had a – I don't think a guest has ever asked me a question.
Yeah. Well, Casey's a special guy.
We're on year two, so I appreciate that, Casey.
I appreciate you guys. You guys there's only a couple podcasts that I'd really try to keep up with, and you make the long drive home during the season. Like, I look forward to when you guys put out a podcast. Now, sometimes, obviously, like, you guys talk about like X's and O's, and I'm kind of like, all right, just get to the jokes and the funny part. And, like, I need entertainment. And
most people are the other way around.
Oh, yeah, you are a fucking minority.
I want the jokes. I want like the funny stories. Like, that's what I enjoy. You guys do a great job. So,
oh, I appreciate that. I got one more question for you, though.
Yeah.
So you were going to be a science teacher, right?
Yes.
When you're writing up your little lesson plans, which subject were you would get most excited to teach? What makes Casey Carter excited about science?
Anatomy and physiology was what I really look forward to teaching. I think it's pretty cut and dry, but you can take it anywhere. Like, as a science teacher, the way I would set that up, because I taught it one year when I was student teaching, was it was like, hey, here's what we need to memorize in terms of the anatomy part. And then the physiology part, we'll get there eventually. But if you're taking A&P, you want to go into some form of healthcare. Like, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a dentist. Like, there's some, you're taking this for that reason. Mm-hmm. So dive into whatever you want to do. So I remember one example was like, we were doing the skeletal system, and one of the students wanted to work in pediatrics. And they were like, I don't know what I want to do for this project. And it was like, your project is to show me you understand these things. Don't care how you do it, right? So I said, hey, I'm a parent. I'm coming to you as a pediatrician, and I want my 12-year-old to strength train. I'm talking about putting weight on a bar. Give me pros and cons of doing that based on the skeletal system, right? And then it was like, okay, so then they kind of did their research. Okay, now that we're doing it, now like, we're talking about squatting, think about the femur. We got to learn the parts of the femur, use that in your explanation. You know what I mean? So it was fun. It was very fluid and flexible. Like, I remember we were doing circulatory system, and one of the parents emailed me and was like, you're not teaching this right. That's not true. This is not how it works. And I'm like, okay, would you like to come teach? Like, what do you do? And they're like, I'm a cardiologist or I'm a heart surgeon. I'm like, okay, love that. Let's bring you in. So you got to remember, these are sophomores and juniors, and that's what grade they were teaching. It was probably too young for those guys, but like, we have to teach these kids who are sophomores in a way that they can understand it. And you have to portray what you know as a professional and a heart surgeon to sophomores who don't, you know, they're trying to figure out what's the difference between a vein and an artery.
This like, is anatomy for dummies.
Yeah. So that was fun. Like, it was always fun. And then connecting things and just watching the kids kind of like, when you go one system to the next, and it's like the aha moment, like, oh shoot. Like, this is why, you know, like, calcium is in the skeletal system, and it's in, you know, cell respiration and cell use, like all of these elements and things, they all combine to work together some way and somehow, like, oh, this makes sense. And when you see that aha moment in young adults, when they're trying to like, not only figure out what they want to do with their life, but they got to learn these things. It's pretty fascinating.
So for all the listeners, that's Casey. I just like, and you, we've heard me talk about how I wasn't necessarily liked in the first couple of years of the program. And I know why. It was because I had a loud mouth and I wasn't Casey. Okay. And he's making that very evident. talking about cell respiration, which is all stuff I ended up learning as well. Me and Kevin did great in anatomy in college. Smoked that class. Didn't go to a single one other than the first one and all the tests. Because the lady read off of a PowerPoint word for word, and it is what it is, but we fucking killed the test. Anyway, Case, thanks for coming on. 10 years is insane.
Thank you.
I mean, it would be great if you could play another 10, if you were actually halfway.
Because then we have an entire party.
Yeah, I mean, then we'll have a relevant guest that's before our time from Iowa. I mean, for another, you'll probably you're gonna outlive the podcast. Who knows how long this thing goes? That's all I got. Anything else, boys? We'll let the guy go. He's got 4 kids. He needs to sleep.
I again, back to the beginning of the episode, I appreciate you calling me out. I'll be better.
There you appreciate go. You.
It's confirmed. Kevin loves long snappers.
I do. I do.
Only took you to do it. Everybody, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed Casey. Drop a comment. Favorite part of the episode on the YouTube. Like button, subscribe, all that. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.